Welcome to the Cognizant Leadership and Innovation Podcast. I'm your host, Thomas Anglero, Cognizant's Nordic CTO and Innovation Officer, with another episode, another great guest that will not disappoint you with your valuable time. Ladies and gentlemen, today we have, I love his intro. I was saying, how do you want me to introduce you? He goes, make sure you emphasize that I'm a recent U.S. citizen and I'm living in Miami. I'm from New York, so we already have this tension on the air. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce to you the co-founder of Big ID, Dimitri Sirota. Dimitri, good afternoon, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, good afternoon. I am very good. Thank you for having me. Appreciate being on here. And hello to everyone out there in the Nordics.
Well, this is a global podcast. You know, when I look at our listenership, we actually are more popular outside of Europe than we are in Europe, just so you know. So maybe it's
the American world. Hello,
the whole world.
Hey, listen. Family, everyone together.
You just became an American and I'm an American. So that's why we'll make this a really American podcast. But anyway, Dimitri, look, there's a lot to talk to you about. So why don't you quickly give us the high level explanation as to you co-founded Big ID. What is Big ID? Why is it irrelevant? And why did your company keep on winning so many awards?
Sure. So we started back in 2018, focusing on data security, data compliance, providing a new generation platform that could deal with kind of emerging regulations, both privacy regulations like GDPR and CPRA, other types of regulations like export controls like ITAR, financial controls like GLBA. But then also have an adaptivity to be able to support all the modern places where people keep and put data. So that could include the public clouds like AWS, Azure, GCP. It could include SaaS applications like Salesforce, unstructured data sources like that reposit files or messages or email. And so we've been selling at this, focusing on enterprises. We operate around the globe. We're at around 100 million, about 500 people, with people in Europe, in North America, in Miami, where I represent, just like Messi. I'm the Messi of Big ID for Miami.
I love that.
And that's us. And we help organizations deal with some of the new challenges, both AI, regulatory challenges, and of course, prevention of breach and incidents as well.
Okay. Regulatory challenges, ID, privacy is become a hot topic slowly. A lot of leaders have heard about it, talk about it, but now they're beginning to be concerned about it, especially now with this Gen AI, and companies are going, wait a minute, we can't just ask it a general question and put our data there. The data goes someplace. Who owns the data and all that? Yeah. Has your company seen a recent, like a logarithmic growth in regards to interest and people interest in learning more about ID and data quality? And then also, what are the questions that you're getting now? Why are you so hot?
Yeah, sure. So you know, we just made the Inc. 5000, a fastest growing 5000 companies globally yesterday. And that's
congratulations.
Third year in a row. Yeah, thank you very much. We made the, you know, we've been Deloitte 500, which is fastest growing companies in the US. We've been Cloud 100, CNBC top 25 companies. So clearly, I think all of those that require kind of audited financials demonstrate that there's a growing and swelling interest in data integrity, data security, data compliance. Gotcha. And it's driven by two things. Mm-hmm. One is the fear of data risk, especially as companies put more data in the cloud, and that could be SaaS, that could be IaaS. Secondly, companies are driven by not only trying to understand the risk of their data, and that risk could be insider, outsider risk, it could be regulatory risk, but they're also worried about finding the value, right? Where are the nuggets, the Glengarry, Glen Ross data? Yeah. That is going to propel and drive that business forward. You see that today kind of manifest around this push around generative AI.
Yep.
Where
yep.
all of a sudden they're thinking, okay, I need to get on that boat because this is the new internet, right? I'm not going to be that company that in 2001 still hasn't put up a website. So I want to get in there early and I want to be thinking about, you know, making sure that we've mapped out some of the use cases.
Yep.
But in parallel, I got to find that high value data that is going to be useful to driving new initiatives in the business. But simultaneously, I need to understand where the risk is in that data. Because exactly. I can't just put an employee intake form and give it to ChatGPT or give it to some private large language model. If I'm going to give it some data, I need to know, is there health information there? Is there social security information in there? Is there personal or notable? Am I putting a patent in there? And so we kind of help organizations make sense of their data, catalog it, inventory it, but also reflect on where there's risk and where there's value so they're better prepared for these new areas like generative AI.
So when a moment ago you said, you help to find that nugget of data that identifies this is the most valuable data you have. And going forward, you could do something. Maybe you could create a new business model based on that data.
Yep.
I want to focus specifically on that. And that is this. I'm a CEO. I'm listening to this podcast. I go, yes, that's what I want. But yep. How do you do that? Do I assign a team? Do they need 6 months or 6 weeks? Do I hire your team? How do I find that that nugget of data? And then also, my company's 50 years old. I have so much data. How do you find that one nugget of data with all the data I have in my company?
Yeah, so it's basically an asset discovery problem, but it's a different kind of asset discovery. So a lot of your audience will be familiar with asset discovery using tools like CMDB, what ServiceNow has, or BMC. There's newer products in the asset discovery arena, like Exonius as an example, and Armis. And those are all about finding devices, right? Mobile phones, laptops, physical servers.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, the value of your business is actually inside of those things, right? It's not the physical device. Yes, it'd be a shame if you lost it. But if you lose it, the reason it's a problem is because there's data on there.
Yeah,
and so the real thing you want to be able to inventory, to discover, is that data. It could be a file. It could be an entry in a table. It could be a field in a SaaS application. It could be a piece of code in a code repo. But that's really what you want to be able to inventory, your digital data assets. And the challenge with that is that they're ephemeral. They change, people edit them, they get created, mm-hmm. sometimes they get archived or deleted.
Yep.
And so being able on a continuous basis to look across a modern data estate, and a modern data estate is more than what a data estate looked like in 2005, right? 2005, yep. You had yep. like maybe a mainframe, you had Oracle SQL, you had Microsoft SMB for files, and you had Exchange, and that was kind of like your universe. Today you have all kinds of esoterica where data could get reposited. You have like an AWS, S3, Dynamo, Redshift, EMR, RDS, yep. Aurora, Athena, Kinesis. You got the same kind of equivalents in GCP, same kind of equivalents in Azure. You got thousands of SaaS applications, lots of dev applications. So lots of places. And then of course you still have your legacy. You probably still have a mainframe in your basement running and it has vSAM and DB2, and you probably still have Hadoop somewhere. So you got to be able to look everywhere. So I think one of Big ID's big innovations when we got started is how do you create a consistent way to access and kind of read these systems without copying the data, which obviously you don't want to do because then you create honeypots, yep. yeah. bad actors, bad nation states. So you don't want to copy the data. But you want to create a GPS for the data. You want to create a map of the data. You want to know what's where, and you want that continuously updated so you know where the good stuff is and where the bad stuff is.
Right.
And that's essentially what we built. At least that's the core. We've obviously expanded from that initial area. Now, what propelled us in the early days, if you go back to 2018, was you actually need that in privacy. Because one of the big kind of takeaways from GDPR is that companies are responsible for two big things. One is privacy reporting to regulators like CNIL in France or OCI in UK. But secondly, that individuals, employees, consumers have a right to their data, which means you need to be able to locate data that belongs to Thomas or Dimitri or anybody in between. And you need to be able to do that regardless of the language. And you need to be able to do that regardless of the data, right? That information on Dimitri could be in an email. It could be in a file. It could be in a database. It could be in Snowflake. It could be in Lakehouse. It could be in thousands of places. And yet I need to be able to piece together, here is the information I have on Dimitri. And so when we got started, we kind of figured out a way to look everywhere without putting software on everything, to make it kind of very easy, without copying the data. So the data stays kind of in Salesforce and Workday and everything else, but essentially creating a map and creating a map with relevance, right? So if I care about Thomas's data, I can basically build a map and say, here's all the places where I have Thomas's data. So if Thomas wants his data, I could then provide him a response to that. Conversely, we've added over the years more types of AI, more types of ML to make more sense of that inventory, right? So I want to find information that contains this string or information that looks like a patent or information that looks like a mortgage form. And so we have various kinds of ML to be able to kind of spot these nuggets, but also spot the risk. And the risk could be things that you define, right? If I have two pieces of personal information in proximity to each other, that's a risk. Or if I have an employee form that describes their kind of payroll like a W-2 in the US, that's a risk. So you could define the risk and the level of risk. And so we simultaneously could go out, look for interesting graphs and relationships and understandings of the data, highlight where I have high value data, and you could define what is high value to you, simultaneously tell you where you have data that could either violate regulatory requirements of GDPR or just represents risk to you, maybe some combination of data that so forth.
Okay, Dimitri, let me just summarize what you're saying, if I get this correct. So you can map the data that my company has without replicating it. We're very clear about that. And by mapping it and knowing where all the data is and what is all the data, I then, with my leader group or my most innovative people curious people, can start asking very intelligent questions, and then I could query my data, and it will identify the places where the answer or the data that I'm looking for, it will pull it out saying, this piece of data will help you. This piece of data will help you. This is referring to this or that. This is referring to this. So I could pull it, like, if a bad expression, I could figure out which shoebox in the closet that I haven't opened up in 30 years actually has that one little thing that I've been looking for, correct?
That's right. And it could look in things like SQL type databases, data lakes. It could look in a variety of places, SaaS applications, and it could tell you also the risk, right? So it doesn't just tell you, where do I have data that looks like this? It could tell you some of the risk considerations. Now, again, it doesn't have to pull it out. If you want it to be pulled out, it can, right? If you want to run a report and say— Okay,
but it'll say it's over there. It'll say that data is located over there.
It's over there. And if you want to pull it out and say, Thomas wants his data, you could do that. And then if you want to delete Thomas's data because Thomas said, I don't want you to have my data— Right. We have modules that sit on top. So the core is that kind of discoverability, that data asset discoverability. Sometimes people call it an inventory. It's a virtual inventory since we don't copy the data. Sometimes people call it a catalog. Right. Sometimes people call it a map. Whatever term you like to use, that's what I understand. We do. And then we have modules on top.
So I see this being huge for any company that is this a B2C type company, because they have huge amounts of customer data. And they've been saving that customer data for God knows how long. And if one customer says, you have to delete all my data, where the hell is all their data? It could be everywhere, right? We've been having so many different vendor and contracts and licenses and back data lakes. But you could, with 100% assurance, say, we have now identified all your data and we have now deleted all your data. That's one simple explanation, but that's what you could do.
That is a common privacy use case, but it's not limited. We have a lot of manufacturing customers. We have a lot of energy customers. And the reason for that, like, look, in manufacturing, one of the concerns right now is I need to find, let's say I build missiles. I need to find everywhere where I have a design of that missile so it doesn't get exfiltrated by accident to maybe a foreign country. So that's also a type of data analysis. I got to find every instance of this schematic and provide some ability to track it so it doesn't leave my country or doesn't leave my organization. So there's a lot of these type of examples where data knowledge, what I sometimes refer to as KYD, know your data, is elemental. It's elemental to satisfy certain regulations. Maybe it's ITAR, maybe it's GLBA, maybe it's PCI, maybe it's HIPAA, maybe it's GDPR. It's elemental for being able to ensure that I don't have a large data attack surface, right? I don't have 18 copies of very sensitive data that I don't need. It's also very, very important if I just want to find the good stuff, right? The things that are going to drive that next generation of applications using generative AI or whatever kind of AI we're going to have in the future.
I'm liking what your company does. When we talk about generative AI, that triggers the next one. And that is that with generative AI, you know, they say you have to know how to write a prompt. But that means you have to understand what is the question you're going to ask, right? And so you are, you're sort of the ChatGPT of the privacy world because you're the one, you have the engine to go out there and find where the answer to that question lies.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. So, you know, to some degree, a lot of the AI is like the large language models, you know, for the things that people are kind of worried about right now, like whether it's OpenAI's ChatGPT or whether it's like Llama from Facebook or whatever it is. There's kind of an input. There's kind of a black box, these large language models that, you know, basically kind of vectorize the data and apply certain applications to essentially give you kind of predictability around how they come out. And then there's the output.
Yep.
The prompts are really how you kind of interrogate that black box.
Exactly.
But you have to put a bunch of stuff in there, right? You have to train that system. And so you have to give it data. The worry that people have is I can't just give it everything, right? It'd be beautiful and easy if I could just basically back up a truck, take all my and dump it into Llama or OpenAI.
Absolutely.
The problem is in that data, I may have some patent that hasn't been filed yet that I don't want my competitors to know. It could have a design for a brand new automobile that I don't want another country to know, or maybe a fuel cell. It could have my employees' vital statistics, their salary, their health records in terms of claims. There's a lot of stuff that could be in there. And the worry people have is, you could do these prompts, right? You know, show me this, this, this. And who knows what comes out? It's a black box, right? So the best policy is to make sure that what you put in doesn't have anything that's going to get you in trouble on the other side. Now, it doesn't mean you can't use certain classes of data, but you need to be wise to the fact that it may have social security number, health information, and maybe purge that or exclude that data from that input. And that's kind of why, from an AI standpoint, AI is just one example. You have the same problem in analytics, right? I want to do reporting using Tableau or Power BI or Looker, and I want to know I got good data, right? Exactly. I want to know the data's current. I want to know the data doesn't have a lot of gaps. I want to know that I don't have better data. So across the board, whether you're worried about valuable data, whether you're worried about risky data, what I think Big ID realized is they kind of go hand in hand. You have to have an understanding of what is valuable and what is risky. And you need to be able to look across a vast array of places where people keep data. SAP, Oracle ERP, Salesforce, Workday, Zendesk. All those places are legitimate places where people keep data, GitHub, GitLab. And so we're unique in that we're able to look everywhere in a very kind of light touch without copying the data, give you a way, a kind of an analysis, whether you care about, you know, what data belongs to this person or what data is associated with this car. And then make it easy for you to report on it, making it easy for you to find nuggets, make it easy for you to extract, like, okay, I want to use this data, but I want to tokenize or redact, you know, the social security number. So with Big ID, all of that becomes possible. And now, again, there are use cases. So sometimes people do call us and say, that privacy use case you mentioned, I want a more automated way of being able to fulfill data access and data deletion requests from my employees and customers, right? I don't want a data steward or an analyst.
Very straightforward.
Spending weeks on that.
Yep.
Sometimes it's a breach use case, right? I had an incident. I want to know what data was affected, where that data originated, and I want to know who was impacted, right? Who by state and country, so I don't have to send, I don't have to send every single customer in my database, you know, a LifeLock account. So there's lots of different use cases if you first start by knowing your data.
I understand now why you've won all these awards. You are the missing piece. You're like the intelligence. You make the dumb data intelligent. And
we're
you
the big Bigfoot of data. No, I just made that up.
No Bigfoot jokes, please.
We're not the missing link. We're not the missing link.
No. Let's give some respect to Sasquatch. But you are not the missing link, but you are the missing layer, because that you are a layer. You're a layer above my data.
We are important.
Yeah.
We are. And then but we made it easy. Not only again, we started by kind of trying to make sense. Again, creating an architecture that doesn't copy the data. You don't have to copy it to your Hadoop. You don't have to, because that's impractical.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't have to copy it to your Snowflake. So we kind of make sense of that. We build you that GPS or map of your data or inventory catalog, whatever term you want to use.
Okay. So big question. So I think everybody understands very clearly what you're doing, and I think they're drooling as much as I am. So they're wondering, who's your perfect type of customer? Who are you having a lot of success with? And then also, what is the time duration for, I would just say my company's 20 years old. I have huge amounts. Everybody says huge amounts of data can be anything, right? But I want to be able to query my data as soon as possible. How long does that take?
Yeah. So look, it obviously, if you're we have a Fortune 10 company, I'm not going to give you exactly which number, but they were able to get live in 7 months, and we were able to look at a vast across 13 lines of business. It depends. Not every company starts everywhere. Some focus on just the cloud. Some focus on some hybrid. Some focus on particular pockets, like they care more about unstructured or these kind of dumping grounds like Snowflake or S3. We could do everything. But again, if they're organized and we work with them, and we have tons of partners like Cognizant that have trained and skills, and Cognizant's done a lot of work with Big ID, especially in the US, then they could do it relatively rapidly. And I think the key is just making sure that there's an effective project plan and statement of work. But you know, we've done it with some of the biggest brands and companies in the world.
Okay. Let's look into the future. So we've done the past of what Big ID is. We've done present as to how it can help a leader today. Now we look out into the future. Because you are playing with so many people's data, and I don't want you to give me anybody's proprietary secrets. We can do that while we're not recording. Looking out, what predictions can you make? If I'm a leader right now, and knowing that you're playing inside of data, what advice can you give me? What should I be looking at? What should I not be looking at? Tell me the truth and save me from all the hype out there.
Yeah. So look, I think, so here's kind of the three areas that we typically kind of interact with, and the three kind of titles that are most common. So one is the data organization. So think chief data office. They care about finding the good stuff for analytics and AI. And what they want to be able to do is typically catalog, classify all their high value data. And some of it, they've had some tooling that could support them in the kind of SQL world.
Yep.
What makes kind of generative AI difficult for them is that they have nothing for their unstructured data, like their documents, their emails, their support tickets, things of that sort. So I think the one thing is you need to start thinking about, how do I kind of make sense of that? How do I inventory that? How do I catalog that? How do I have a kind of a searchable inventory of those data assets, my high value assets?
Incredibly important.
They need to get started on that, because usually what I find is companies start by saying, well, you know what? I need to assign to my lines of business test projects, right? Come up with some use cases for generative.
Yeah, that's what everybody does. Exactly.
Maybe support.
Yep.
But they don't think about the other side of the barbell, right? So at some point, maybe in 6 months, maybe in a year, they will have identified those use cases, but they will have not even started on inventorying their data. So then they're basically at square one, right? Yes, they have some fantastic use cases, but they're still a minimum of 12 months away from being able to do anything with that, because there's no data. You know, they don't know where the data is. So I think that it's a little bit, I think, for the that data office that's thinking about embarking on generative AI, I think what's important is a barbell strategy. On the one hand, you need to start thinking about and assigning to your teams ideas, areas where you think you could make use of this safely, consistently, and productively. Simultaneously, you need to start thinking about preparing your data, finding out where you have good data, creating that asset inventory of your data with that additional insight or intelligence around what is valuable and what is risky. And you could do that without kind of bridging the two together, right? You could do that later. And obviously Big ID has the tools to support that kind of bridging, but they're really two kind of separate initiatives. But at least this way, when in 6 months to 12 months, you've identified those places where you could do generative AI, you're ready to go, right? You could start monetizing or commercializing some of that. So that's one area for the CDO.
Hold on a second. Yeah. Just want to challenge you because you made me uncomfortable, and I think you might make some people uncomfortable too. What happens if I don't have a CDO? What happens if this is the first time I've even heard that my company should have a CDO? Can you help me become a little more forget?
Yeah. So at some companies, there's always somebody that helps them understand their data. CDO is becoming very common in the US, in other markets. In some places, it's the CTO. Mm-hmm. So they make decisions around where data gets reposited and data architecture. Sometimes it's the CIO, but there's somebody in the organization that thinks about data because you, to some degree, previous to AI, you thought about it from an analytics standpoint, right? Exactly. And analytics is all about getting those reports to your executives, to your business lines, so that they could kind of do better jobs around personalization. Yeah. So we're already kind of a generation in around analytics. You know, that started off with the Cognos and, you know, those tools from the 2000s. So it's not a new thing. So regardless of whether they have somebody with the explicit title of CDO, there is some organization in the company that cares about data and data analytics because they cared about data reporting and extracting kind of information. The only thing that's changed is we've gone from kind of just thinking about analytics and you know, kind of reporting on structured data, data that I put in my Teradata or data that I put in my SQL, and started thinking about, okay, well, now I have these kind of more fanciful AI models, these black boxes that are going to have to take that data and generate something that kind of looks like more of a human. So there's somebody in the company, and CDO is a catch-all. Again, much more common today, but for organizations that don't have that, a CTO or CIO usually has that responsibility.
And just one caveat, because you know, I'm over here living in the Nordic countries, the CDO thing is not caught on. And for those people listening out there, if in your organization you don't have anyone who's passionate about data, it's about time you find somebody.
I think data is the lifeblood of a modern business, right? I know that obviously a lot of our customers have invested in retail locations and you know, have storefronts or have branches like at banks. But at the end of the day, it's about knowing your customer. It's about knowing your data, right? And, exactly. And the way you interact with your customer is, even if they just come and buy some food at your branch office, you know, understanding them is understanding every time they bought something, what they bought, their preferences, how they've interacted with delivery services. Like, your knowledge of that customer is so vital, but again, it spans multiple touch points. Exactly. And so today we've all become, over the last decade plus, digital businesses. And digital businesses means we're data businesses, right? We've come a long way from the, you know, 2001 when, like, we put up a website that said "Hello World," and you know, maybe there was a way to kind of look for a couple of things, like a couple of books. Today, even when people interact in a real life, I think the kids call it in real life, IRL. I just learned this acronym. It still goes back. It still collects data, and making sense of that data is important. So again, if you don't have a CDO, you should contemplate it, but typically there's somebody that cares about it because, again, they've been down this path with analytics. Now, the other organization I would say that's very important is the CISO, right? CISOs typically care about risk around everything. And one thing about CISOs, and I'll kind of, for your audience in the Nordics and Southern Europe and
this is the chief security officer, right? That's what you're talking about.
Security officer, yeah,
yep,
yeah.
Yep, go ahead.
You know, at the end of the day, there's 5,000 companies in security, many, many companies in security. But here's one thing I've learned in my 20 years in the industry. At the end of the day, security people care about two things. One is resiliency. So making sure that you don't go down as a business, making sure that your e-commerce site is up and live and somebody isn't doing some kind of internet attack on you. The second piece is the integrity of your data. That's it. The data is the stuff that gets you a headline in the Wall Street Journal, right? So-and-so company lost 100 million employee records.
That's not the headline you want.
The company was ransomed, right? And they can't get access to any of their infrastructure.
Yeah.
The data is actually one of the two main things. And all of these 5,000 technology companies, even when they don't explicitly talk about the data, they talk about firewalls. They talk about EDR, endpoint, you know, putting on laptops. They talk about vulnerability assessment of applications. All of this universe of technology at the end of the day is really about securing everything around the data, right? Making sure that the data is safe. The only difference with Big ID is we go after the data, right? We're saying, look, if data is the thing that you are worried about being lost or misused, then why not know your data so you can make decisions, preventative decisions, long before some bad actor or a rogue employee tries to steal it, that could essentially put you on a safer spot, right? I want to know if I have passwords to most my vital voting records floating around. We can tell you that. And if you know that beforehand, you could do, you can make decisions around deleting those like floating password records. You could do a lot of things. So the thing about Big ID is we kind of said, you know what, let's actually create a solution to help you secure your data before you have an incident. And should you, by terrible luck, have an incident, help you respond to that incident much faster by knowing what was impacted and who was impacted. So that's why security people care about us, because they want to know where they have that risk. They want to know, they want to find a way to get rid of that risk, what they say in security, remediation. So remediate that risk. And we help them do that. We help them do that in the cloud. We help them do that in the data center. We help them do that in their code, you know, the environments where they keep and use code. We help them do that. So that's why security people tend to care about what we do, is they have a data attack surface. We help them understand where there's risk there, either because the data is sensitive or because of the way the data is exposed or because of the way the data is used. And then we help them take action on that. The last group that I'll mention is the privacy and compliance group. They're the ones that are trying to make sure that the company is conforming to regulations like GDPR or GLBA or ITAR. And they similarly need an understanding of the data. They got to know what data is subject to GDPR, what data is subject to ITAR or GLBA. Historically, you know, in the bad old days of 2010, what they would do is they would do a questionnaire. They would send Thomas and other employees a questionnaire saying, hey, where do you think our sensitive data is? And they would kind of jot it down in a spreadsheet. Well, people are imperfect recollectors, right? They're not
vast
of memories. Yeah, especially when you're talking about data and sensitive data.
Exactly.
And it's shocking to think that's still how it's done. It's surveys and questionnaires.
State
of the art.
Probably still is. Yep.
That is not just the majority. That is 95% of how it's done.
Okay, there it
is.
And
so what Big ID brings, and I kind of sometimes talk about that as privacy and compliance theater. You feel better about doing it, but you shouldn't. And what Big ID brings to the table is a more accurate, higher fidelity, a little bit like my microphone here, a higher fidelity interpretation of your data. So that not only can you report to regulators with accuracy and precision, which they love, and then they'll get off your back, simultaneously, you can make decisions, right? Whether it's fulfilling Dimitri's request for his data, or whether it's minimizing data or making sure certain data doesn't cross national boundaries, you could do that accurately, right? And not rely on questionnaires and surveys. So those are the three kind of audiences that generally speaking we think about. Now there's others, you know, marketing people would care about customer 360.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are the ones that we historically have kind of catered to.
Dimitri, I have not cut you off throughout this whole thing because I think you're such a wonderful storyteller and how you craft your explanations that you have spoken to 99.9% of the people out there listening. I think you've done a wonderful job and you're going to be buying a new microphone. So that's really exciting.
I will. I'm going shopping today. Amazon, get ready.
And for the last few seconds, what one thing you would like to tell all those, all the leaders and all the, everyone listening right now from all your experience and your wonderful ability story, wrap it up and just leave us with one beautiful golden nugget, as you said before.
Yeah, look, I think we're all business leaders in some form, and you know we've all heard that the old adage that knowledge is power. Well, you know the knowledge in a digital or the power of the digital enterprise is the knowledge of the data, right? The data is the currency of a modern digital enterprise, right? It's the bits and bytes that either represent the risk to your business or represent the value to your business. And being able to better understand that, having that knowledge, is the starting point for doing a better job and more effective job around AI, for being able to reduce and remediate your data attack surface. And lastly, to ensure that you could better comply with whatever regulators throw at you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Dimitri Sirota, co-founder of Big ID, a recent U.S. citizen living in Miami. I love it. Dimitri, I look forward to you in the future producing children's books and keep on telling your wonderful storytelling. You're an artist at it. And to everyone out there, Dimitri, what's your website if anybody wants to talk to contact Big ID?
I'm probably old enough to still say that, .bigid.com. Very easy. You could call us, you could email us, visit our website. I think there's even a pager number on there if you want to page us.
Are you kidding me? Seriously?
I am kidding you.
I was watching a movie the other day with my kids and the doctor got a pager. My son turned to me and goes, what the hell is that? I started laughing.
I had a pager on my first date with my wife and I think somebody just bought me a gag gift of the same pager. But yes, no pager, but there is a phone number, there is an email, and there is a website and lots of information on there. So please visit it and call us maybe.
Fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your time. Thank you for everything out there. The Cognizant Leadership Innovation Podcast is on Spotify, it's on iTunes, it's everywhere. Share with your colleagues, share with your friends, share it with Sasquatch, Dimitri's best friend out there. Dimitri, thank you for your time. To all of you, thank you for your time. And to everybody, stay care, stay safe. Bye-bye, everybody. Bye-bye, Dimitri.
Yeah, thanks, Thomas.